This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. 5 years ago, the price of oil was just below $25 a barrel. The average price of a gallon of gas was less than $2. Flash forward to June 2008, now a barrel of oil costs more than $140. I don't have to tell you what that's meant for the price at the pump. So we went out this week and talked with a few people at a local gas station. Here is what Los Angelino David Knight had to say.
We're hurting out here. This gas ain't playing, man. I mean, $80 to fill up a tank? Come on. And how many times a day a person might have to do that if they're out here trying to make a living? It ain't right.
If gas prices are bringing you down, then you might take some comfort in knowing the blues are sweeping the nation. Cities, businesses, and families are all feeling the crunch. According to Wayne Hockwater, it's also affecting moods. Wayne is a professor of management at Florida State University's College of Business. He has been studying how $4 a gallon gas brings out the worst in people. Wayne, how you doing?
Nice chatting with you.
Well, you know, how did you get the idea to look at this from a psychological perspective?
Well, I actually started this whole stream of research when gas was about $3 a gallon, and certainly that piqued my interest through the surveys and through casual observations with people, and I just continued to see on people's faces just this pain, this difficulty, this worry, and certainly it's my intention to explore that more fully because it is something that is a legitimate issue, not just for businesses, but for American society.
So you talk about this as a control issue. What do you mean by that?
Well, what we know about stress is that if you can have some control over it, it's not so bad. You know, if you need to lose some weight and you have a personal trainer, that's your control. You're going to be okay. But I think the things that are really affecting people the most, I think there are three things. One is there's really no getting around gasoline for a lot of people, despite public transportation, riding your bikes. A lot of people, they just don't have that option. I mean, it's just not viable. The second thing, as you mentioned, is it's a matter of control. People can't do anything about it. They can't barter the price down. They can't, you know, they can't manage it themselves. They're just tremendously helpless feeling. And I think the third thing that is equally important is the people that I talk to, if you ask them to look down the road 6 months or a year, they're very pessimistic. I mean, they simply don't see this situation or their financial situation getting any better. So, you know, if you told folks that, hey, look, January 1st, things are going back to $1.50, folks would be okay. But they're really, for a lot of people, there is very little end in sight, and that's very disheartening.
You know, we measure consumer confidence, but do we have any other ways of really measuring the psychological health of people who are citizens in terms of what they buy?
Well, I mean, it's as far as purchase patterns, I can only say one thing, and that my family and I happened to be at Disney World a couple of Saturdays ago when it was empty. So I think that's part of it. But as far as measuring people's just mental health, you know, you have to look at doctor's visits. You have to look at absenteeism at work. You have to look at all those things that are consequences of just feeling disheartened, overwhelmed, pessimistic about the future, and kind of go from there.
Now, are people placing the blame any one place, like the government or the oil industry? I mean, when you talk to people, do they have a target for their unhappiness?
Every place. They target every place because most folks, this is such a popular topic in the news and the media that people are forming their own opinions of who to blame, and there's really no shortage of culprits in this case. And some folks blame big oil, of course. Others blame our current administration and prior administrations for getting us into this mess. And a lot of folks really don't blame anybody. They are just trying to figure out ways to manage, and where are they going to cut, and how are they going to reschedule vacations that were going to require 10 hours of driving and into an hour and a half and 2 hours of driving. People feel like they don't have a say, and they can't do anything about it. So blaming people is kind of a moot point.
Now, speaking of these psychological effects of gas prices, what do you think happens when the price of gas goes up by 50 cents and then it comes down again by, say, 5 cents? Does something that small overall, does it brighten people's mood?
Not unless it comes down 5 cents every week for 50 weeks. No. I mean, people are in tune to the trend that they've been experiencing, because every 3 days they've got to live with it. I mean, they've got to pull into the gas station, and they know what they're paying. In fact, the 5 cent reductions in costs, most people look at that and say, they're just playing with us now. They're trying to get our hopes up that this is going to go down, and this is a little bit better, and it's going to lessen my blues, and I'm going to get on track. No, that 5 cents per gallon reduction doesn't do anything.
All right, Wayne, thanks for talking to us.
It's a pleasure. Have a great one.
You too.
Thank you.
Wayne Hockwater is a professor of management at Florida State University's College of Business, and he has been studying the psychological effects of gas prices.
You know, I'm a substitute teacher, and I used to take off a day or two and say, well, I'm not going to work today. You know, this was prior to this gas problem. Now I have to do it every day. I have to go to work. It's like it's a hopeless situation, because someone said that by Labor Day, it would be up to something like $6.50. I believe that, truly.
Those are comments from Paulette, with whom we caught up at the pump last week. You might say people hit hardest by the gas crisis are people who work in their vehicles. There are almost 6,000 taxi drivers in Washington, D.C. That's more cabs per capita than any other city. Carolyn Robinson is a taxi driver there, or as she's fond of saying, a public service vehicle operator. And she's with us now. Hey, Carolyn.
Hi.
So how much do you pay for gas each day?
Well, it varies, probably depending on how the need I have for working. I can use yesterday as an example. I have to use Hi-Tess gas because I have a Lincoln Town car, and Hi-Tess is roughly $3.35 to $3.59 a gallon. And I had to purchase $80 in gas yesterday, and I worked somewhat extensively. And I have less than a half a tank left now.
How'd you get into this business?
Well, I've been driving a cab now for 33 years. Really, my husband, due to some, I guess, either unfortunate or fortunate circumstances, was involved. Someone got him involved, basically, when he was in the halfway house. And he decided to get involved, and I was at home with the kids, and I said that I need to do that, and he didn't think I could do it, and I successfully passed
the test. You proved him wrong.
Yes.
So you, how many days a week do you drive generally?
Every day.
Yeah, really.
There's some days. I mean, I'm not necessarily always working every day. I mean, I have other responsibilities. I have a 85-year-old mother that I have to take back and forth to the doctors, and and I have a granddaughter that I may have to pick up from school or from daycare. But I work mostly during the evening, because I work with a yellow cab company, and they have contracts with a lot of the law firms. So their attorneys or their support staff, when they work past a certain hour, then they get a free taxi ride home.
And they're getting the town car, which is the nice big fancy car that you provide, but it probably eats up a fair amount of gas. So, just to put this in context, have you seen your bottom line after all this gas get smaller? I mean, your take-home pay.
Absolutely. It causes you, because first of all, in the District of Columbia, regulations state that we have to burn our air conditioner from May to, September. So with the gas, that's yesterday. It was the reason that I had to put extra gas in the car, also because I happen to have a job that was going to Dulles International, which is 32 miles from downtown. So that's 32 miles over and 32 miles back. And now I really saw the reduction because with our new system, we have a new meter system, and we got a decrease in the mileage, 30 cents a mile. So when it would ordinarily, it would be a lucrative $55 to $60 run, now it's just a $40, a $45 run. Mm. But then I still have to put additional gas in my car, you know, so.
And the meters, really, you have to actually pay for your own new meters, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. That was something, yes, we had to pay for our own meters. This was a ruling that the mayor made under the auspices of Senator Levin, which personally that was, I believe, some type of rider on the school takeover for the public schools, for the mayor taking over the schools. So the cab drivers had to feel the brunt of that. So they decided that we needed meters, but they didn't have any finances for the meters. So that was really an additional cost, because the meters cost roughly $500.
Carolyn, do you think that any of your fellow drivers will go out of business based on what's going on?
Oh, absolutely, because most of us are not getting a fair return on our investment. We have additional fees. You know, we pay weekly fees for insurance. You know, we have weekly fees for radio dues. I pay $78 a week in dues with Yellow Cab, $60 radio dues, $18 Yellow Cab dues, $35 a week with insurance. And a lot of us, like, I'm still paying for my car, so that's additional $125. And we can get repairs on credit, so that's going to be a minimum of $50. Because cars, if you're constantly using your car, you know, a car doesn't last forever. You're going to have to get it repaired.
Well, Carolyn, thanks for checking in. Appreciate it.
All right.
Carolyn Robinson is a taxi driver for Yellow Cab in the District of Columbia, and she joined us from our NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C.
Summer vacation, we used to come at this park very often. Not right now because, you know, we can't spend that much money on gas. Going and, like, come twice a week probably.
That's Amelia. She has two kids and a minivan. We caught up with her across from a local park here in Culver City, California. Despite soaring gas prices, truck and SUV sales were doing surprisingly well at the end of 2007. This year, it's a different story. With fuel prices moving past the $4 mark, sales of large vehicles finally hit a sharp bump in the road. Norris Bishton is feeling it. He owns Airport Marina Honda. That's a car dealership here in Southern California. Norris, how are you?
Doing well.
Well, thanks for coming on. So I have a friend who might be interested in trading her big luxury gas-guzzling SUV for a more fuel-efficient car. What kind of trade value do you think she'd get in this market?
Well, her trade value is going down every day. As gas goes up, the trade value on low miles per gallon vehicles goes down. And she should trade it in as quickly as possible, because every indication is that the values are going to continue to drop.
So when we talk about this business, you know, the Hondas are cars of many different styles. Are you finding that people are coming to you, and when they go on the lot, they gravitate towards the smaller cars these days?
Absolutely. Honda really doesn't, you know, it doesn't have, even its large vehicles are nowhere near the size of a Ford Expedition or Explorer, but even within the range of Honda vehicles, everybody is looking for more miles per gallon. They want to get more miles per gallon, and they will take a much less vehicle than they used to take.
How hard is it to get huge SUVs off the lot for dealers?
Well, first of all, right now what's going on is dealers aren't getting them on the lot. They're not taking them in trade because they know they can't get them off the lot. That's one of the reasons that vehicle sales are new vehicles are down, is because dealers won't take the large SUVs in trade. Once you have them on your lot, you can just watch it drop in value sitting there on your lot due to the high gas prices.
We've heard of some African-American car dealerships shutting down, particularly if they sold luxury models. But in general, throughout the industry, you know, black, white, purple, what are you hearing from other people who run dealerships?
Well, first of all, the domestic dealerships are really hurting. Numerous Ford dealerships here in Southern California have shut down. I also have a Ford dealership, and it is surprising how few people are even coming in to look at the Ford product. So it is and domestic dealerships tended to have more minority dealers, and those dealers are being hit particularly hard.
Do you think that there's going to be a long-term readjustment in terms of, you know, things have gone in waves? The big cars were part of one wave, but then back in the 70s, you had a wave of tiny little cars to deal with the fuel issues back then. Do you think we're going to see another wave of automakers deliberately making much smaller cars?
Any automaker who doesn't broaden its line of smaller cars is going to go out of business. The domestics cannot move to smaller vehicles fast enough, and that's part of their problem because it's costly to tool for new models. Some of the domestics, like Ford, I believe, are going to try to bring models they now produce and sell in Europe, which is much smaller, over here to the United States. But we've reached a point; consumers will not pay more than $4 a gallon for gas, and put it into a big vehicle. That was the $4 was the turning point, and they just said no more.
Just quickly, do hybrids pay for themselves? Aside from all the other, you know, save the planet benefits, will they save your wallet in the long run?
Over time, yes, they will. But again, just as gas goes up, they'll pay for themselves faster. I heard this morning gas oil was at $143 a barrel. We expect here in California to see a $5 a gallon. I've seen $5 a gallon gasoline already in the stations. And I mean, if it goes to, as some people say, $6 and $7 and $8, a hybrid will pay itself off in a very short time.
Well, Norris, it's great to talk to you. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Norris Bishton is a car dealer. He owns Airport Marina Honda here in Southern California, and he's also one of our supporters at NPR.